Have you registered for our upcoming live summit in St. Petersburg, Florida? If not, what are you waiting for? Imagine spending 2 days in person sharing ideas with the same people you've heard on this podcast. The tactics, strategies, and actionable insights you'll take away are incredible. One of our repeat guests and Pinnacle Society member, Rich Rosen, attended our New York Live Summit. He said he added $100,000 in additional revenue in 45 days from just one strategy that he took away. Keep in mind, it was a strategy he was already aware of and he knew he should be doing, but he just had a mental block to doing it. Can you relate to that? Getting a detailed playbook that he could implement, combined with hearing from multiple recruitment business owners who had successfully implemented the exact same strategy, was what tipped him over the edge and got him to take action. If this sounds like something you could benefit from, then visit recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today I'm thrilled to be joined by Charlie Safro. Charlie's the CEO of CS Recruiting. They specialize in supply chain, logistics, and the transportation industry. CS Recruiting is based in Chicago. They recruit nationally. And Charlie founded CS Recruiting over a decade ago and has built it from the ground up into a multi-million dollar company. She leads a talented team of 28 recruiters with an emphasis on a people-first culture. We're going to definitely talk more about that. Charlie's mission is to create meaningful connections that empower others to discover their full potential. That's one that absolutely resonates for me as well. Charlie's a keynote speaker, and her TEDx talk was called Business is Personal, Prioritizing People Pays Off. Charlie, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark. I'm excited to chat with you.
All right. So we found you on LinkedIn because of your great content. And as I said, your mission really resonates with me. So a lot of our guests we find through referral or they're people in my network that I already know. You're one of the people we actually went after and we thought we want Charlie Safro on the podcast. So thanks for agreeing to do it.
I'm glad. I appreciate it.
Something we have in common is we are both parents to three teenagers.
I have three boys that are 13, 15, and 17. How about you?
Okay, fantastic. So I've got a daughter who is 20, and then my two boys are 17 and 15. So there's overlap, definitely.
There sure is. It's like just a circus around here, but it's enjoyed chaos, put it that way.
Fantastic. So how did you get into recruiting in the first place, Charlie?
I fell into it, and I'm going to guess many of your guests do. I actually started my career in the marketing world and spent about 6 years in an agency. And then I moved into a logistics company back in the early 2000s. It was actually my husband's company. We had just had our first son. And I really started doing some marketing for them. They were a small business. I think they had about 8 employees at the time. They had an opportunity to grow and scale maybe 2 months after I joined, and they needed to hire. So they kind of looked around, and I was the one person who could, you know, kind of drop my marketing responsibilities and switch. I had the capacity. So I taught myself how to recruit. And between 2006 and 2010, the business grew well over 100 employees. I'm sure you can relate, Mark. I mean, this was back in the day. I think my primary platform was Craigslist. And then I was making a lot of those flyers I'd hang up in libraries and Dunkin' Donuts where, you know, people could tear off my name and number and call me. So this is all pre-LinkedIn, but it taught me the hard way. Like I really had to be very scrappy and build quick relationships. But I always thought like I'm a really good online shopper and that translates very well to sourcing. And I think that's where I really got addicted to this business is the sourcing part. And then just that satisfaction of finding people and obviously the gratification of placing them.
Well, that's cool. So you helped your husband scale a business from 8 to 100 people. That's incredible. Then you obviously discovered you had a talent and a passion for the recruiting side of the business. What then led to you deciding, hey, do you know what? I'm going to actually set up a recruiting business.
I really never had that thought, just to be very honest. I'm kind of an accidental entrepreneur, if you will. I was with my husband's company for 4 years. They were acquired. A new owner came in. And I put myself on LinkedIn around that time, 2009, 2010. And I positioned myself as a supply chain logistics recruiter because that's who I was at that point. And I was taking on a couple freelance projects. I maybe had like four searches, a really nice balance. I should mention I was, I think, 8 months pregnant with my third son. And all of a sudden, like these opportunities just kept coming my way. And in the beginning, it was because of my niche. People would reach out and say, you know, I didn't even know there were recruiters who, you know, knew supply chain or understood logistics and we need to hire, we'd love to work with you. And I got to a point where I had to make that decision. I'm either going to do this and do it right, or I'm going to walk away before I underdeliver. And that was my trigger moment where I went out, hired my first employee. She's still with me 13 years later as our CEO, and then just continued to scale and build our team responsibly since 2010. So that was really the unintentional. I was a solopreneur for about a year, and it was just opportunity. And I was very fortunate I could bootstrap the business because, you know, I started and with very low expectations, and then really took advantage of the challenge in front of me.
I love this story. Okay, so 2010, you took on a few freelance projects and it just kind of grew from there. But you were 8 months pregnant at the time. So you're launching a business at the same time as you're having your, was this your second or?
Your third.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. Yes.
That must have been crazy. What was that like?
I don't even remember who I was at that time. I had I had a four-year-old, a two-year-old, and an infant. I will tell you, one of the ways I maximized my time as a new mom and probably got ahead, which definitely helped me launch my business, was when I would feed my baby in the middle of the night. You know, he'd wake up 2-3 times a night in those first few months. I would sit on my desktop computer. We didn't have laptops, I don't think. And I would connect with people on LinkedIn. And I would scroll my feed and I would learn. And I literally, throughout the night, would just sit on LinkedIn building relationships to the point that LinkedIn's security team would threaten me all the time. I mean, this was before bots like they are today, but they would send me messages like, you know, someone else must be logging in as you because you're on during the day, you're on at night, you're active. I was like, no, that's my pathetic life right now. But it, you know, I would use those 20 minutes here, an hour there, just to be productive. And slowly and surely, I built the business. And, you know, I'm a worker bee. I don't think I would have had it any other way.
Wow, that's an amazing story. So the first year you were working on your own, then you hired your first person who's still with you. That was what, in year two or?
It was in year two. I secured a meeting with, at the time it was a startup and an entrepreneur. I didn't really know what I was walking into, but he had this idea he needed to hire. So I met him at a, you know, hotel by O'Hare Airport in Chicago at 6 a.m. and I faked it till I made it really good, Mark. And I walked out of that meeting with a huge contract to hire, I think it was 50 full-time employees in a couple different locations for them. And so that was, I remember driving home from that meeting with that moment like, okay, you know, it just got real. What am I going to do? And that afternoon, I sent out an email to pretty much everyone I knew that was under, you know, under the age of 25 and had a network of college grads. And I think it was like my second cousin's friend's best friend connected me to Beth, who we hired, and she's been with us since then. So that was really the start. I mean, I was very scrappy, very resourceful using my network. But then shortly after she joins, we hired our second person and so on. So it was really just opportunity pushed us.
So shout out to Beth. That's awesome. And so really, it was winning that big project that gave you the confidence to, and also the need. You couldn't do it on your own. So you needed help and you could see the potential business. So you hired Beth. It's funny, you use the term fake it till you make it. There's a great, and I know you're a TEDx speaker. I'd love to talk to you about that in a bit. There's a really good TED talk by a lady called Amy Cuddy. I think it's Cuddy. Do you know that one?
I do know her. I haven't listened to that talk, but I know her as an author.
Oh, okay. I do not know her as an author, but it's a really good talk. We'll put it in the show notes along with your TED talk as well. And it's called Fake It Until You Become It. And it's a different twist on it. And the idea is that you're not really faking it because by behaving in a certain way, you eventually become that person that you're wanting to be, right? That's the idea behind it. So
manifesting and that whole thing. Oh, I'm so into that. I might rephrase that when I tell that story now, because I really like that. But yeah, at the time, I just remember being like, I know enough to be dangerous. And I know, you know, how to carry on a conversation. And I'm very curious. So I ask a lot of questions. But I remember leaving that meeting and being like, what did I just do? So I faked it till I became it. I like it.
There you go. And actually, that TED Talk Amy Cuddy delivered in Edinburgh, which is where we're based, coincidentally. So tell me about that huge project then, 50 people. How did it go?
You know, it went good. We helped build this company, which in the beginning, I think there was a lot of skepticism. Today, they are one of the, if not the largest logistics company in the world. It's called XPO Logistics. Anyone in our industry knows their story and very grateful that they trusted me. And I would say in the first 2 years of their startup, I mean, we helped them hire hundreds of associates, and many of our original placements are still with their company today in, you know, leadership executive positions. So very cool to be part of that. Obviously, as they built their team, they built a recruiting team, and I think we actually helped them build their recruiting team, knowing that, you know, we were pushing ourselves out, but that's the name of the game in recruiting. Like they still use us for niche searches. They call us when they don't have anyone in their network, but of course they were going to establish an in-house team. But we really took advantage of the opportunity and just their hiring needs when we could.
That's a fantastic case study to have such like a success story that then it's almost like a domino effect, right? If you can get an awesome result for a client, then that is something you can talk about to win the next client. And then you start getting these logos, not just logos, but, you know, leaders who will vouch for you that you delivered an impressive result with. And then, you know, it just sort of snowballs from there, right? So I guess the big question is, how did you get that, you know, big project when you were only a year in the business and, you know, you were relatively a startup yourself? What do you think allowed you to win that work?
It was an email on LinkedIn. So I think it was the power of LinkedIn right there. I don't know, gosh, I would love to go back and know like what he searched to find me, but I'm going to guess it was something with the word supply chain or logistics and recruiting. And I think my prior experience in the industry, it wasn't like I was, you know, completely new to logistics by the time my company was new, but I had 5 or 6 years in the industry. But yeah, he found me. I actually went and looked at that email a couple weeks ago because I connected with this gentleman again recently. And yeah, it was an email like, hey, I might have some hiring needs, would love to chat. I'm going to be in Chicago next week. And I was like, all right, let's meet. So yeah, we've been very fortunate. I mean, one story that comes to mind from that particular company was, you know, and this I think happened more than many times, but we placed an individual there. This woman was with them for several years. And because of the experience we had with her, she used our team to hire her team there. So we were able to work with her to staff her team. Years later, she left. I think she's been at 2 companies since then. And were her, you know, preferred recruiter. So when I think of, you know, that one individual and how we were able to serve her as a job seeker and as a hiring manager and all the lives we changed from that one connection that we had, those are like the moments I have to reflect on. Like that is how we built our business, just through good work and quality service.
That's powerful. That's a fantastic example of what can happen. Absolutely. So then, so you hired Beth and then shortly thereafter hired your next person. Can you kind of plot the milestones in this more than 10-year journey to scale to where you are today?
Yeah. We talk about those early days as the Wild West. There are still, I want to say 5 or 6 people on our team that were with us in probably the first 3 years of business. And so we joke, like thinking back, like, what were we doing? We were all full desk. Like we, you know, you just, everyone did everything. And my story as a founder and today as CEO, I think is very different than most bootstrapped entrepreneurs. I loved recruiting. And so when I started this business, you know, I was self-taught and I would train our new hires. They all came in limited experience, if any. Most of them were recent grads. And so I stayed in the trenches and we got to a point where we needed, you know, some executive decision making. And I brought in a outside COO, someone I had worked with prior in my career, trusted very much. And I took a back seat to leadership for the first 8 years of the business with employees. I was really our executive recruiter. I had client relationships. I was the face of the company, closing leads. But I would say if I led it all, it was by example. We were in an office, so we had a really great office buzz and camaraderie, but I was just doing my thing. I would weigh in, but I was not making decisions around people's compensation or policies or contracts. And I knew where I belonged. I just wasn't there to lead the company, especially with three very young children. So fast forward, we're growing the business. We grew, we matured, we scaled a lot during that time. And in 2020, our COO resigned and it was unexpected. So there was literally a moment where I went from being a founder and an independent contributor to, holy cow, this is my business. I need to take this baby back. And on a Friday, he resigned. And on Monday, I took over leading my business. And it was a very natural, organic transition. It was just like the universe was like, now this is what you're going to do. And all these dominoes had to fall to get you here. So I have been leading our business for the last 4 years. We had a great culture before. I would just say now we are so much more intentional about it. I have an all-female leadership team that I couldn't work without. And it's been a fun ride. So I think working in the trenches, getting my hands dirty, I was in every position. I have empathy for all of our employees. I know what they do. And I understand the job. So no regrets, but yeah, I kind of handed the leadership over just knowing it was beyond what I was capable of at that time.
This is so interesting because there's a lot of people who start a recruiting business because they're good billers or they're maybe now a little bit different to you. They might be top performers at another recruitment agency and then they start up on their own, but they really have no leadership experience. They don't, you know, they know how to, you know, win clients and make placements. But they have no idea how to scale that business. And it's not really their forte. They're good at running a desk. Now you made a decision to scale, but you actually brought in somebody to help you to do that. So you stayed focused on where you were having a big impact, you know, the relationships, bringing in accounts for everybody and being a role model and the figurehead of, or the not figurehead, that's the wrong word, the face of the business. What do you see the pros and cons of doing it that way?
I mean, I think, you know, I'm not going to change history, so I'm going to try and look for the pros and the silver linings. But like I said before, I mean, I dealt with it all. Like I have, I've put out all the fires. I have done, you know, I have unfortunately had to lay people off. I've done it all. And I think, again, it gives me empathy for my team. Like as we've created new positions or, you know, had discussions in the last couple of years around a role, the responsibilities, the compensation. Like, I get it. However, I will say the last few years have been, it's been a journey, but I feel it is incredibly freeing to delegate and to have other very capable people on my team, many who do things better than I do in their department. So, I think that has probably been the hardest thing for me is delegating. But I almost was just thrown into the fire and it was like, you can't do this all on your own. So, you know, it's now or never. But I would say I don't know if my team would have as much respect for me if I never recruited. And if I never recruited in this business, like if I just started the business and stayed as the CEO from day one, I don't know. I feel like that's how I connect with my team and garner that respect. Like I know how hard it is. I've been there. And also being a recruiter, it really prepared me to be a leader for all these years. you know, I'm talking to candidates who love their job, hate their job. I'm talking to hiring managers who recognize, you know, that they've got issues in their culture or need improvement. So I feel like through just like observation, I have learned so much and I've been able to really, you know, implement it on my team, made many mistakes along the way, but have learned from my lessons. And yeah, it was like almost just observing from the sidelines until it was time to get out there and reclaim it.
This is really interesting, Charlie, because actually, I think you're the first person who has expressed this thought, which is that as recruiters, we have such a tremendous opportunity to learn about business from our clients and candidates, right? You're seeing companies, amazing leaders who have built, you know, very high performing cultures. And we've also seen the opposite, right? We've seen, you know, cultures which have major issues. And you're the first person that's mentioned that, of course, that allows you to level up as a leader as well, because you can avoid things you know are going to create a bad culture, and you can, you know, copy the things that you see good leaders doing and think, hey, we could do that at our business. But then you've then taken it full circle, because I believe staff retention is an area that's really important to you and that you really focus on. So people first, culture, I want to learn what that means to you and retaining your people. But you've gotten so good at it now that you're actually teaching your clients how they need to retain their staff. Could you say a little bit more about this people first culture idea?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people are surprised when I talk about retention as a recruiter, because, you know, they'll question, if you're a recruiter, don't you want to work with companies that have high turnover, that have vacancies, that have spots to fill? And I think the truth is no, like we don't want to just place someone for them to not work out. We want to make long-term matches that benefit all parties involved. And so we need to understand what our clients do to retain their current team. How is their engagement? How is their culture? Those right there are our selling points to help recruit new talent. So if they tell me that, you know, they have a great learning and development program and they really focus on internal promotions and advance their people, that's what we're going to use when we are talking to these job seekers and they're making hard decisions. So just like you said, I mean, it was a lot of observation and just seeing what worked. I would say a very common reason that job seekers reach out to us and probably all recruiters is lack of feeling appreciated or respected. And so that was something I witnessed very early on, especially in the trucking industry. It's very rough and tough and male dominated and thick skinned. But I kept hearing that over and over. And that was, I was not in a leadership role, but I started doing little things that, like, it is who I am as a person. It was just not what I brought into the business world before, where I would write my employees handwritten cards or leave a $5 Starbucks card on their desk just to say thank you, or, you know, a plant on their birthday just to make sure they felt recognized. And in the beginning, I had no budget. I mean, I was, you know, paying out of pocket, but little things, just, you know, bringing someone coffee as a thank you. And our team has embraced this. And as we've grown and evolved, I am so proud of this appreciation recognition program that we have, that we are recognizing our employees for all their milestones, certainly professional ones. But when someone on our team buys a new house, we all celebrate with them. And, you know, we send them our little signature doormat as a housewarming gift. And so that was something. And when I talk to clients, and I may know specifically that, you know, employees in their organization feel unappreciated, these are the things I want to teach. Like, it's just about the human. Sure, you can go out and, you know, get this amazing recognition platform that has a point system and you pick prizes. That's great. But like, as a small business, how do you do it with intention and no budget? And I think saying thank you does not cost a thing, but it is such a little, just a little shift in mindset that can really just totally transform a company's culture. So that's just an example of like little things we pick up on. And then, okay, how can we solve this for our team or make it better or get ahead of it? And then when we see that it works, like we want to share that and see our clients doing it too.
This is brilliant, Charlie. So I'd love to go deeper on this if you're open to it, because I agree 100%. If you look at all of the studies of employee satisfaction and what motivates and demotivates people, then surprisingly, for now, maybe in recruitment, money is higher up. And of course, everyone wants more money, right? But it is not the number one thing that is going to motivate or keep someone, right, from changing jobs. And it tends to be a hygiene factor. A hygiene factor means that if they feel underpaid, then they're going to be dissatisfied, right? But there comes a point where earning a certain level, just earning a little bit more, is no longer going to be enough to keep them engaged and keep them satisfied. And actually, the recognition is way more important, and it doesn't cost anything. That's the crazy thing. And when people, as you say, well, we all know as recruiters, when you ask people, why are you looking to leave or why are you open to a change, then feeling underappreciated or not recognized is definitely a factor. Did you know that many of our listeners first heard of the Resilient Recruiter from a friend or colleague? Word of mouth really is the best form of advertising. So if you enjoy the show and get value from it, I'd be grateful if you would pay it forward by sharing it with others. Have a think for a moment. Who in your network might benefit from this podcast? Maybe a current or former colleague or a fellow member of a recruiting association? It would mean the world to me if you would drop them a quick email, text, or LinkedIn message with a link to the show. Thank you so much for your support. Now let's get back to the interview. Could you elaborate on how your recognition and appreciation program works, and in a way that, because I love this idea. I think all of our, you know, small recruiting business listeners should think about implementing something similar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a weird thing to formalize. And we talked a lot about this as a team when we really wanted to take it more seriously, because you don't want to attach, you know, a dollar budget to someone's ups and downs, but it's business. So we have a budget. We recognize, like I said, new hires for sure, any internal promotions or internal moves, anniversaries. And then, you know, if they have a baby, if they get married, if they buy a new home, we also have a separate fund, like a petty cash fund, consider it, just for impromptu employee recognition. And this is where the power of like our team and these connections really shine, because there's a form that any employee can use to submit to our people operations team that acknowledges somebody on the team who just might need a little pick-me-up. Sometimes it's, you know, in recruiting, we submitted 10 great candidates. We were really feeling great about the search, and they ended up promoting someone internally, and our recruiter is bummed and feeling defeated. So they'll submit a form and it's like, okay, let's just send her a gift card for lunch today. Or I know where she gets her manicures. Let's treat her to a manicure tomorrow. So it's such simple stuff. But then it's also, you know, so-and-so just broke up with his girlfriend. He probably isn't going to talk about it, but I could tell he was struggling in our meeting. And that's when, again, like we have this petty fund, and it could just be making sure I know as a leader and I can text or Slack him. But usually it's something from the team. A lot of people are like, how do you know your employee's favorite candy? That's like a great example. On their first day, you know, we have them do all their paperwork and we ask them questions like that. It's like, what is your favorite candy? You know, what is your bucket list trip? And we can do something that simple, like, here's a box of Raisinets. I hope it cheers you up. And it cost me 99 cents, but you are going to remember this for a year. So those are these like little things when we talk about recognition and appreciation. So we have a set budget for every employee, knowing that they will all have, you know, an anniversary every year. And then they'll probably have some professional and personal milestones, and then a separate budget for these ad hoc situations, you know. Obviously, if somebody's grieving, we're going to send flowers or do whatever, plant a tree. But it feels good to have that budget. And it's a priority for us when we're doing our budget planning.
So, Charlie, this is such a great example. And thanks for sharing it so much detail. What, by the way, our listeners love it when people get tactical and share like specifics. You know, the concepts are great and the strategies, but thinking about how could I apply something, I think that's super valuable. What, apart from your reward or your recognition and appreciation program and the budget, what else goes into having a people first culture?
Oh my gosh, so much. I think like the way to sum it up is we know who our employees are behind their titles. And even in a huge company, the leader, the CEO, the executive team may not know everyone's story, but their manager should and their peers should. And so we really promote like this, you know, safe culture. We do anonymous surveys. We're asking for feedback. We have one-on-ones. As the CEO, I meet with every employee for 15, 20 minutes every quarter just to check in. And I start the meeting by saying, I don't have your metrics. I don't have any production information in front of me. I just want to know, how are you? What have you been up to? What's going on in life? So we do a lot of things like that. I mean, we are really proud of our flexibility. We never went back to our office after the pandemic. So a work from home model. I'll share a story that I do a lot of workshops around this idea of recruiting and retaining. And, you know, you can't recruit if you can't retain. And I did a workshop a couple of months ago at an HR conference. So it was a room of individuals that all came from different companies, director level and above. And I asked this room, there were about 60 people there. I said, how many of you were recognized by your company on your last work anniversary? And I'm going to say 6-7 people raised their hands.
Oh my gosh, really? 10%?
If even. And
that's crazy.
And I joked, I said, let's see the Rolex, get the Rolex. And one woman said, I just had my 10-year work anniversary a couple weeks ago. And did my company acknowledge it? No. She's like, my boss did nothing. The owner did nothing. I've been at this company 10 years, but my team decorated my cubicle. And when I walked in, there were balloons and posters and a card that everyone signed. And she's like, and that is why I stay at my company, because we have a culture of appreciating people. I wish the owners and executives did it, but they don't. But that's okay, because they are spreading this message of gratitude and appreciation. And she's like, and I have a team that, you know, they carried that burden. They did the heavy lifting to make me feel appreciated. So I think that's a great tactic. Like, you know, I've been sending these handwritten cards to my employees for years. Now there are a few managers on our team that do it by choice. They know how I made them feel. Now they're paying it forward. So like things like that, anyone can do. I think that's such a powerful story that, I mean, she is not thinking of leaving this company because they didn't recognize her after 10 years because her colleagues did. I don't know. I'd be pretty upset if I worked somewhere 10 years and my manager never acknowledged it, but they saved the day.
Absolutely. Another great story. And if we have time, I'd love to hear about your workshops and keynotes that you deliver, because I think that's... I mean, from a business point of view, that's a smart thing to do, but I wondered how you got into that. Before we do, can you give us one more tip or strategy on building a people-first culture?
Yeah, I'll keep it high level, but we think about culture as a magnet. Like, you need to attract the right people and also repel the wrong people. And when we think about culture as a magnet, we break it down into 4 talent magnets, very high level. One of them is walk the talk. Like, does the company live the values? Those are very easy to implement in everyday life. When you're shouting people out or giving, you know, high fives, tie it back to a value. We do value winners every quarter of our employees that are really demonstrating their commitment to living a value. The second magnet is beyond the paycheck. We talked about this before. It's like, what are you offering beyond that paycheck every other week? And it could be, you know, flexibility and paid time off or scheduling and flexibility around that. It could be your 401k, your benefits. So what else are they getting tangible and intangible? The third area is intentional connection, what we talked about. Do you know who your team members are outside of the office? And so many ways to get at that: events, one-on-ones. We do these written check-ins every week where we're just asking employees, you know, just trying to get a pulse of the team's happiness. And then the last one is growth takes two, which is really this idea of we collaborate with our team members on their evolution at our company. There have been many times where I've seen someone and been like, she's going to be an account manager. But if she doesn't want to be an account manager, that's not the plan. So we do annual evolution meetings, and it's the employee's chance to talk to the executive team about their future, about what they're doing today that they love. We ask them, you know, which team members work they're most interested in, and then we're able to set up shadowing sessions. So I think that's an important thing. Like, you don't just get promoted because your boss picked you. You get promoted because we are working together to create a position or to, you know, find what your long-term goals are with our company. So those four pillars are all the different things that you have to think of. And then within them, you know, so many different tactics and strategies that can be executed.
That's brilliant. I love that model with the four, did you call them magnets?
Magnets. Really think of a magnet. That is what is attracting people. It's holding the right people in the company to retain them. But when you're hiring or evaluating your team, like, you will repel people. And that's what it's for also.
So let me circle back. You were sharing the evolution of your business, CS Recruiting, and the kind of critical time that came in 2020 where you stepped into embraced the full leadership role as the CEO. Could you say more about that? Like, how did you, what changes did you make, or how did you transition into that role successfully?
I think the easiest way to summarize it is, for many years as a recruiter in this industry, I played the game. I had the armor on. I mean, our industry back then, it was like 85% male. Now we're getting closer to like 70, 60% male. But I just had that thick skin, and I went in, I did my job, I was hustling. And I think, you know, years of motherhood softened me, but also, you know, this moment where I took over leadership was April of 2020. Like, the whole world was uncertain and in disarray. And the only thing I knew how to do was be human and make sure my employees knew that, like, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know if we're going back to the office. This is what I'd like to do, but I'm vulnerable and in it with you guys. And I think it was unintentional, but I was just myself. And I think I had hid that for many years, thinking, you know, we can't have a woman CEO in this company. Our clients won't respect that. And I can't make these legal decisions and financial decisions. And then by the time I had matured and, you know, all the dominoes fell, it was like, okay, now I have an established company and I'm going to run it with my feminine, like, what I thought were weaknesses, but I'm going to embrace them as superpowers. I'm very empathetic. I'm very compassionate. So I think that is really the big shift, is like, okay, I kind of like took my team back. I'd always influenced them, but now I'm going to nurture them and kind of mother them. So that was really how I did it. I will tell you, it took me 2 years to get out of the weeds, maybe 3 years. It was an ongoing, what meetings can I get cut out of? And it's funny because I'm not a controlling person, but I'm a very caring person. And so when I am unable to delegate, it's not because I need the control. It's because if it's going to be hard for that person, like, let me do it for you. So just learning, like, I have to delegate to challenge and empower them. But earlier this year, you know, I took over leadership 2020. Now we're in 2024. I finally said to Beth, like, I think I'm there. Like, look at my calendar. It's free. I have time to think. I have time to network. I have time to do stuff like this with you. So it took me about 4 years, but it was a work in progress. And, you know, I could only do so much as one human.
That's amazing. I'm so glad that you shared about, instead of becoming somebody else, you actually used your strengths and incorporated that into the role. So I think that is really important. But also, I'm glad you circle back to delegation, because this is why most recruiting firms never scale. It's because the founder owner doesn't want to let go of things, thinks they're the only person that can do it properly, or thinks by the time they explain or teach someone else to do it, they could have just done it. We have all these mind blocks and excuses, right? And so how did you get beyond that to the point where you could confidently empower other people to take over certain things and know that they were going to do a great job and you didn't personally have to do everything.
One thing that I'm very open about is I am a leader, but I'm not a manager. And if you really think of my career progression, early in my career, I managed someone for about 2 years. But really, I was not managing people, as I just shared in my story. And so that is probably the first piece of self-awareness I had, is that I don't hold people accountable, because if they mess up, I'll fix it. And I have a really hard time with conflict and tough conversations and hurting someone's feelings and all those, you know, feminine emotions. So I don't manage. Like, it was that easy. I think in the beginning, it was like, I'm going to lead, I'm going to have, you know, these four direct reports that I'm going to manage. And I was very honest early on, like, I'm not good at this. And my team knew what I was good at. So it was not easy, but it was conversations, even like taking assessment tests as a team and talking through, why am I the one who is reviewing every contract when it's clear I have no patience or attention span? And when I say those things out loud, another team member would be like, I like reviewing contracts. Like, I'm happy to do that. And I think those were some of those moments where I was like, oh, I can make the decisions, I can drive the business, but if I can delegate some of these things that take me longer than they should because I don't enjoy them, let me focus on the tasks that fill me up and give me more energy. But there was one moment exactly like that where we were in a meeting and I was kind of like, this is the most frustrating part of my job. And every time a contract comes in my inbox, I lose 3 hours. And it was just someone on my team being like, I have a little bit of background, and I could do that. So just learning and communicating and me being able to say, I am not good at this and I don't want to do it anymore. I have been able to do that many times in the last couple of years.
That's brilliant. I love that example, because it's so true. There's probably people in, and if you're listening, there's probably people in your team who would not only, who would actually like to do some of those things that are on your plate, that are dragging you down instead of, you know, fulfilling you and making you feel like you're performing at your best. And so it's a development opportunity for them, but also they'll probably, because they like it, they're probably going to do it better than you anyway, right? So
exactly. And now we're cross-skilling them and upskilling them. And, you know, the more they do this, now this is a skill they have for our future or for, you know, the future of their next company. So it really is amazing when you just start to step back and realize, one, I'm not good at everything. And my team will support me focusing my time on the things I enjoy doing that drive the business instead of the things that are mundane and, you know, suck my time. But also people are better than me at things. And that is okay. And that is what a true leader does, is embraces that and recognizes it and hires people smarter than them and trains people to be better than them. So I really like reflect back, and it was a journey. That is probably something I'm like, I would have done that overnight if I knew how capable they were and could have just trusted the process a little more.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. So there's a couple more things I want to be sure to ask you. There's so many things I want to ask you, but we've got a limited time, so I'm trying to prioritize here. One is, you're excellent at leveraging your voice through social media and building your brand. Could you tell me more about how you've developed such a strong brand and how that's important for leaders why is that important for leaders to do?
Yeah. I mean, as I told you before, I was on LinkedIn very early and I used it for many years, probably the way every recruiter does. I mean, we were on the paid recruiter platform and I was finding people and sourcing and building projects and in-mailing and connecting. And I would read my newsfeed, but I very rarely posted. And I remember my LinkedIn rep, this was probably like 2018. He's like, you should really be posting content. Like, you've got a lot to say. And I was like, what do people want to hear? How I source or how I found that placement? And I just couldn't wrap my head around the information that I could share that would be of value to my network of, you know, Caucasian men that are in supply chain, if I really had to look at the demographics of it. And so I started posting, and I posted a lot of really expected content, you know, 5 interview tips or the best way to, you know, negotiate that next salary and what people thought a recruiter would talk about. And yes, I could talk about all those areas. They didn't excite me. And they didn't excite my audience because I would literally get 4 likes. this time, I mean, I had 30,000 followers on LinkedIn or 30,000 connections. And when you get 4 likes on something, it's like, okay, the algorithm is not working here. And people aren't responding. So I did that for 2 years and I was, you know, twice a week on LinkedIn, I would batch my content and share articles and just very boring stuff. When I scroll back through my feed, I'm like, who did I think I was? This, like, no one wanted to read this. And in 2019, my middle son created a TikTok, and it's a cool TikTok, but it's him and a friend shooting hoops. They both shoot their ball at the same time and it literally, like, goes into the hoop together. On TikTok, it went viral, 8 million views. ESPN picked it up. And my son was like, put this on LinkedIn. Let's see what happens. And I was like, no, that's not what LinkedIn is for. Like, it's a business professional community. And then I was like, what the heck? Like, let's just bring some, you know, some entertainment to everyone's feed. And it blew up. It went absolutely viral. But the result of it, beyond just like the vanity metrics, were the comments in the DMs and people reaching out and saying, I didn't know you were a mom. This is your kid? Which one is your kid? Do you have other kids? People would reach out and be like, thank you for making my day. I am now following you and telling my whole network to follow you. Post more content like this. And then in those comments, you'll also see, can we schedule a meeting about your recruiting services? I'm hiring. When can we talk? And it drove business in the least expected way. And so that post is what gave me the confidence to just start opening up. And it's a, you know, progression. If you really were to study my post, you'll see that I took baby steps. I was like, okay, they like the kids. I'll start showing more about my kids and being a mom. And then I would start talking about being a leader and, you know, hard conversations. And in the last 4 years, I've posted every 5 days a week, I think, pretty religiously, unless I, like, take a break and, you know, I'm out of the office. But yeah, it's like I've trained myself to just always be looking for inspiration that I can use to inspire my audience. So I think that is really what my secret has been. And a lot of times I have a plan for what I'm going to post, but a lot of times it's like, ooh, this is what I'm feeling today, or this is what's going on, and this is what's going to, you know, I'm going to move the other post and do this one instead. So it's a full-time job. It's exhausting, but the proof is there. Like, my presence on LinkedIn led to the presence of many of our team members and our company. That has driven our business. Like, there is no denying that, you know, there was a point where 92% of our new leads were coming through my LinkedIn. So yeah, and it's like, I can't put an ROI on it because sometimes these people would see me on LinkedIn and pick up the phone and call our office. But I know that I created this brand awareness that when companies needed to hire, they'd be like, who's that recruiter, that, you know, that girl who always posts stuff? And I was talking to a network of people that could use our services. So just gave me that one post gave me, like, that permission slip to just be myself. And the response was so positive that I was like, oh, okay, I could continue to do this. And it's funny because I'm not I don't have a Facebook account. I don't really do much on Instagram. I don't have an X account. But LinkedIn has just been my jam all these years.
That is such a brilliant story. And you're a role model for what we teach in our coaching program, actually, Charlie, because what you just described, I agree and buy into 100%. And it's so interesting. Like, we do recommend that people post insight as well that's relevant to their audience to position themselves as an authority and have that credibility. But the posts that really do well are the personal ones, right? About your children, your pets, your milestones, daughter graduating from university, or, you know, that type of thing. And because, as you said, it makes you into a real human being, right? It makes you relatable. It gives people a window into your world. So you're not just some other recruiter, but people feel like they actually know you, and they understand your values and they trust you. So they know, like, and trust you, right? And so that's why it's gonna drive business. It's not just, you know, it's not just about posting business stuff on LinkedIn.
Exactly. And I do try and tie these personal posts to business or to leadership. I mean, almost every time I post something personal, I'll get a comment that someone's like, take it to Facebook or take it to Instagram. And I'll, you know, someone will not want to see it, so don't follow me. But yeah, right after that basketball video, my oldest son broke his arm. And I ended up posting a picture of his x-ray where like it was, you know, a bone broken in half. But the post was about what I learned from my then 14-year-old about resilience, because it was the first game of the season. He was going to be out now the whole season. And he was like, that's okay. I have next year. I'll be part of the team. I'll sit on the bench. I'll, you know, see if I could keep score this year. And like, so that's, I posted, yes, I'm a mom. And yes, my kid broke their arm, which, you know, feel bad for us, fine. But that's not the purpose of this post. The purpose is what I just learned from a 14-year-old, that everyone should think this way, because we're all so quick to go to the, you know, worst case scenario. So I try and tie it to business. And the trolls will be there always. So just have to accept that. Yeah.
If you're not getting any negative, you know, feedback from people, then it means you're not doing enough. You're not active enough, right?
Exactly.
You're never going to please everybody. This is a little bit like the magnet example you gave earlier, right? You're going to magnetize and attract the people who you want to work with anyway. And if someone doesn't like your content or doesn't appreciate it, then you're repelling them, and you probably wouldn't have wanted to do business with them anyway, right?
Exactly. No, there are a few topics that might be controversial that I choose to speak up on. I'm not posting about politics. I'm not posting about religion. You know, I'll give you an example. 3 years ago, we had a mass shooting in our community in Highland Park, Illinois, at a 4th of July parade. And so I posted, a couple weeks after that, there was a lockdown in our high school. And so I posted a picture, you know, from our local paper about just gun control and like, why are our children feeling unsafe every day when they get on a school bus? And I wasn't taking a stance. I was just saying, like, this is now personally affected. You know, we had 7 people in our community that were tragically killed on 4th of July. And I care about this. And I care because my kids are in this community and they don't feel safe. The amount of hate I got on that post, I think I lost like 400 followers overnight.
Wow.
But I was like, exactly, like, good. Good riddance. Like, if you can't read this and interpret it that I'm not trying to take a political side, I'm just like, have empathy for me as a mom, because now I have so much empathy for anyone who's been in anything like this. And I want, it should be talked about. Not to mention that it's our community. Like, I had to address this with my team. I had to make sure, you know, people, several of our team members were at that parade that day, part of this chaos. So I feel like once I talked about that, and I probably put 3 or 4 posts up about it over the course of, you know, the whole situation rolling out, so much negative feedback. But that's something that I'm like, I'll reread the post and be like, I didn't offend anyone. I didn't say anything other than my feelings. And if that's too much, like, please don't follow me, and please don't call us for business either. So
good for you. That's a great example. Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. Thanks for sharing that, Charlie. So let's talk a bit about the market, because we can see the stock market is in turmoil, and so people are freaking out a little bit. What is your perspective on what's happening in the market, and how are you responding to it in terms of as a leader in order to support your team?
It's been a rough, my gosh, probably 18 months at this point. End of 22, we started seeing a decline in hiring demand. And it's just continued. And you know, I think this has affected everyone in every industry. But, you know, when you think of supply chain, if consumers aren't spending, companies aren't manufacturing, then they're not distributing or transporting anything. And those are the positions that we're really working on. And so we've seen a huge decline in jobs. I feel like it happened end of 22, early 23, where our clients really reevaluated their hiring needs and workforce planning, and either like froze searches or just canceled searches. And it's been a slow climb back up. I will be very honest that there's a lot of fear in the market. And I think that is the biggest driver, is that companies overhired in 21, like, you know, the great resignation. That's what everyone was responding to, and business was booming. And then as the economy has declined, they have to, you know, cut their workforce or do something different with these people. So I think a lot of times it's like, okay, you're going to help us recruit, you know, because we don't really need you in this position right now. So where can you add value? Or they just don't have the budget to hire a recruiting firm and take that risk right now. So we're hanging in there. I'll say our loyal clients have continued to give us business, which has kept a steady momentum. It's been harder to get new business in this last year, probably because of some of those reasons and loyalty. But one thing that we've done a lot of things to adjust to the market. Something very basic is for years we've been getting inquiries about resume writing and writing job descriptions. And we've never done it for a fee. And all of a sudden we were like, why don't we? This gives our people something to do and they can exercise those muscles and it's a new revenue stream. And it's also serving this community of job seekers by being able to offer these services. So that was one, you know, new service we stood up. But the biggest one was our consulting, which is also involves workshops and some of the keynotes that it was like, we've been working so hard on these ideas and we've been applying them to our company. So let's help our clients and let's share some of this information and these stories and these, you know, tips that they can use to improve their culture. So that has been the biggest shift. Like, we will always be a recruiting firm at heart, but now we're able to really advise our clients on both ends of that spectrum. So, you know, really preparing to make that hire and then really being prepared to retain that person. And it's fun stuff. It's talking about a lot of what we've covered. It's not a heavy workshop. It's just understanding like the importance of connection and really reflecting on, you know, how do you feel if you're not recognized for your anniversary or your birthday? Think of how your employee feels. So that is the biggest pivot we've made. And it's a good one. It's nothing like we will always continue to offer these services because we were forced to, you know, serve our audience in a different way. And we created something that really works.
This is cool, Charlie. So the consulting and training side of the business, is that a revenue stream or is it more of a marketing play? Like what, how do you see that developing?
Great question. It is a revenue stream. That is the intention. But it is also supporting recruiting in a lot of direct and indirect ways. So, we've had some clients that actually want to consult and have, you know, some of our advisory services before a search. They really want to do it right. They want to understand the market and have some benchmarking. So we're able to work with them and, you know, offer them that. And then our search is going to be that much more successful because we're all aligned. We've had these conversations. But it is some of these workshops, like I will do paid workshops for private groups. I will also do workshops like the one I spoke of at conferences. And so in those situations, sometimes it's a revenue stream, but it's more exposure and really talking to companies from all industries for that service. But also most of these companies have a need that we can service from a recruiting side too. So I'd say it's more of marketing exposure, but the revenue stream varies based on, you know, the opportunity and who's in the room, basically.
This is brilliant, Charlie. And the thing is, the silver lining, this happens to me every time I have a business setback, is I learn and adapt and my business gets better. So the silver lining here is the exposure that you're getting and the credibility and the value you're adding in the ecosystem that you serve is absolutely going to pay off tenfold, right? And so then, and maybe if you were super busy filling jobs, you guys might not have developed that side of the business, right? And so by taking this opportunity to really expand your reach from a marketing point of view and add that consulting arm to the business, when the market picks up again, you guys are in pole position to like just take loads of market share.
Thank you. That's what we're hoping for. We feel really good about being able to advise. I mean, we have so much direct experience that we want to share. Just sometimes it's a heavy lift. So there's a fee for much of it, but we're there to, you know, support their growth in the end.
Charlie, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for being my guest on the Resilient Recruiter. I really enjoyed it.
Me too, Mark. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure to talk shop with you.
Absolutely. Look forward to keeping in touch with you, and definitely follow Charlie Safro on LinkedIn. Loads of great content there.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out some of my other episodes. You'll see one or two suggested episodes on the screen now.